dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There are few people who bring more intelligence to bear, particularly on matters involving the Middle East, than our first guest. She is Shoshana Bryan, the Senior Director of the Jewish Policy Center, and it's always a pleasure to have her with us to help sort things like the attack by the Syrian government on a civilian population with chemical weapons and what has flowed from it. Shoshana Bryan, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's so good to have you.
It's a pleasure to be here, Frank.
So we have this attack. It has now been said by the United States government to be indisputably one perpetrated by the Syrian government. Bashar Assad has said today on French television that he didn't do it. The United States nonetheless retaliated against him for having done it. Give us your thoughts on what the ground truth is here and the appropriateness of that retaliation.
The ground truth is somebody flew a Russian-made airplane from a Syrian military base to the town, dropped something from it that killed a large number of people. Autopsies show that to be sarin gas. It is unlikely that anyone was flying from that base other than Syrian pilots or Russian pilots. I do not believe it was Russian pilots. So I think we had the evidence that we needed. We had the radar tracks. We had the autopsies. I think we knew what we were doing. The question is why he did it.
Yes.
And
why did he do it?
Well, it's not like he doesn't do it as a matter of course. He kills his own people all the time. But I think in this case, we've overlooked something. And that is that in his mind, and it is a paranoid mind, in his mind, when President Trump said, I'm not interested in regime change in Syria, I'm only interested in ISIS, Assad decided that the United States and Russia had come up with a plan together to get rid of him. And this was a way of telling the Russians, I can operate independent of you.
Well, this is very interesting. There would be the countervailing argument that we've heard from some quarters, particularly those critical of Donald Trump, that actually his statement, that of Nikki Haley and others, were interpreted by the Syrian regime as a get-out-of-jail-free card, that this didn't have anything to do with the Russians. This was just now taking advantage of a new reality that his place in Syria was going to remain that of the dictator in charge, at least of parts of the country. You don't see it that way?
That's a very Western idea. That's if we say to you, we're not going to bother you for the time being, you believe we're not going to bother you for the time being. The problem for Assad is he doesn't have a Western mind. The Russians would like to leave Syria. It's very clear. The Russians are unhappy with their position there. They're unhappy the war has taken so long. It's cost a lot of money. They can't just walk away. Trump did, in fact, give Putin a mechanism by which Putin could develop a political settlement and get out. The Syrians don't want the Russians out. They felt they were going to be sold out at the Astana bargaining table. They wanted to prove that the Russians needed to stay and the Russians needed to defend them. And so what Assad was saying to Russia was, you're not leaving. And in fact, now the Russians are not leaving.
That's really the interesting question. I guess on the basis of what we've heard so far from Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State's visit to Moscow, that they're not going anywhere, at least for the time being. They're not selling out their client. They're going to continue, presumably, to prop him up. Is that your reading?
It is my reading. They will not leave now. We gave them a way out. Assad screwed it up for them, and now they can't leave. And this is a very bad thing for the Russians, who never intended to be this involved in Syria.
Yeah. So where does that leave the United States? There's been a lot of talk lately about regime change is now back on the table, that is what, of course, Barack Obama said he sought, but that Donald Trump is now apparently inclined to seek it as well. Is that your reading, or is that, again, a bit of, you know, smoke and mirrors?
Well, I don't want to be the guest who comes on and does all smoke and mirrors, but regime change, God help us if this is about regime change. It is possible to separate punishment from regime change. You know this if you have children. You don't want to kill them. You just want to change their behavior most of the time. This was designed to say, and by the way, this was less about Syria than a much bigger issue. This is designed to say there are very few international norms. One of them is the norm against chemical weapons. It's illegal, and the consensus is against it. And if you violate the consensus over here, you may again violate it, or someone else may violate it over there. And so it's essential for someone to say, if you violate one of the very few norms that we share in the world, you will be punished. You won't necessarily die. You won't necessarily lose Damascus, but you have to be punished because other people have to know that punishment stands behind these violations.
You know, I remember vividly the debate in the United States Senate back in 1997 under President Clinton that revolved around the adoption of the current most comprehensive treaty governing chemical weapons, and that is the Chemical Weapons Convention. And there were those of us who argued at the time that the likelihood of everybody in the world giving up chemical weapons was zero, and that the West would invariably fulfill such commitments, but would then be left with, in terms of deterring those who retained these weapons from using them, with only the option of using other kinds of techniques, whereas in the past, notably, though this has been somewhat controversial as a result of Sean Spicer's comments yesterday, in the case of Adolf Hitler and his declining to use the vast quantities of chemical weapons he had for offensive military operations. He used them, God knows, against the Jews and others in his death camps. But in terms of using them as an instrument of warfare, he refrained because he feared, we know, he feared retaliation in kind. I wonder whether, you've given a lot of thought to these sorts of things, Shoshana Bryan, whether the sort of international view of the horrific nature of these weapons and the possibility of being punished with strikes like the one we saw may in the end not prove to be enough to prevent their use in the future.
I don't know if it will prevent their use in the future. You are right in that Hitler was deterred for fear of retaliation in kind. And if you look at the use of chemical weapons since World War I to today, they have not been used against people who could retaliate in kind. And that's why it's necessary. The Egyptians used them in Yemen. Saddam Hussein used them against the Kurd and the Marsh Arabs, but never against anyone who could retaliate in kind. That's one of the reasons it was essential for the United States to say retaliation doesn't have to be in kind. It only has to be painful. And so this was 20% of Assad's air force. That's pretty painful. The next time it will be bigger. It will have to be bigger until people are convinced that the use of chemical weapons will produce a response that's unacceptable to the user.
Listen, very quickly, we only have a minute left, but I would like to ask you about a big event coming up this weekend in Turkey. You have, of course, studied closely Recep Tayyip Erdogan, the man who hopes through a referendum of his people to essentially finish off what's left of Turkish democracy and be able to rule henceforth as a complete Islamist dictator. What are your thoughts on that, Shoshana Bryan?
My first thought is Stalin's thought. It doesn't matter who votes. It matters who counts the vote. Erdogan will win the referendum either because he'll steal it or because the people will actually vote for him. Turkey is a very Islamically conservative country. It always has been. We call it a democracy, and it was a democracy. But the number of truly secularized, westernized people was quite small. A very, very large percentage of the Turkish people has always been conservative and relatively religious. They're coming out now. So Erdogan says to them, essentially, why shouldn't we have a government that reflects our values?
The value principle being Sharia, unfortunately, it seems.
Yes, not terrorism necessarily. I want to be clear about that. But yes, Sharia law, a very strict interpretation of Islam, yes.
We have to leave it at that for the moment. Shoshana Bryan of the Jewish Policy Center, thank you so much for your time today and for the superb work you do there. Come back to us again, if you would, very soon. Next up, we'll talk with Dr. Bruce Bechtel, one of the country's preeminent authorities on North Korea.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.